Okay, hi everyone. Welcome back to Ada Byron. A last minute change to the schedule. Carla has heroically brought forward her talk. She's going to talk to us about untraceable messaging. I'll get out of the way of her slides. Please welcome Carla to the stage.
Hello. Thank you for being here and for welcoming me again. This is my second talk, and just in case you weren't in the previous talk, I'm going to introduce myself a little bit again. My name is Carla Grigio. I'm an assistant professor at Aalborg University in Denmark. I work in the Copenhagen section, and I want to emphasize a little bit that I'm an assistant professor because I'm coming from academia, and what I'm going to present today is a research paper that was just accepted to the Proceedings of Privacy Enhancing Technologies journal. It's very cute because the conference is called Pets, then people talk about pets adoption and why people adopt pets and the barriers of adopting pets, and it's really cute. The paper is called User Perceptions and Attitudes Towards Untraceability in Messaging Platforms, and it's work that I did together with Boel Nelson from Copenhagen University, Stefan Schrammek from the University of Tokyo, and Aslan Askarov from Aarhus University in Denmark. You can get the preprint of the paper. It's not officially published yet, but the preprint is online, and I will also share the link at the end of the presentation. So in the type of work that I do human-computer interaction research, and recently I've been also doing research on usable privacy, and this means that I not only study technology, I mostly study people. So I want to invite you today to put yourselves in the shoes of my research subjects before I tell you anything else about this paper. So, I prepared a Mentimeter so that you can follow along some questions, and you're going to see two user scenarios that are exactly the same user scenarios that I presented to the participants of my research study in an online survey. So the QR code is about to disappear in a second, but you can still join via menti.com and use the code that appears up there. So we have 13 users. Now, talking about privacy, security, and trust, I'm placing immense trust on you right now, okay? So, this is the first scenario that the users of this study had to read. So, Alice is a member of parliament. She recently confirmed that an alleged case of corruption involving people of her political party was indeed true. She feels that the people involved should confess and resign, but her party plans to keep denying it. So she wants to send Bob, a journalist, some confidential documents that expose the corrupt party members, but she's afraid of being caught as the whistleblower. She wants to leave no traces of communication between her and Bob, so instead of sending Bob an SMS or an email, she sends the documents via the app Texty, which is popular for its privacy and security features. So with this in mind, the question is, for you, what security and privacy features do you think Texty should have to prevent other people from ever knowing that Alice communicated with Bob? Do you see an input to respond? Yeah? Great. Okay. Seal sender, anonymous IDs. There should be no way of knowing what either Alice or Bob ever used the app. Yeah. End-to-end encryption, ephemeral messages and no log encryption, metadata encryption, no link to identifier. Anonymity, full end-to-end encryption, no plain text transmission of metadata. Let me get rid of the QR code now. End-to-end encryption, no metadata. No requirement to link with external identifiers. Print and give the doc by hand. Pseudonymous ID. Zero knowledge encryption, decentralized. P2P as in peer-to-peer communication or point-to-point encryption. Okay, no, let's keep your anonymity. Okay, thank you so much. I am hoping that some of you are already saying like, that's different to what I thought. There are different perspectives on how to answer this question. Let me see what else is coming up. No logs, obfuscated user IDs, no 3P IDs, no trace that media was sent, no trace that Alice and Bob did communicate, no trace if somebody hacks Alice's computer. What I would like to highlight from these answers, and this was a huge bet because I didn't know what you were going to answer, is I see some patterns in the data. I see that many answers are talking about end-to-end encryption, but perhaps are a bit more explicit from time to time. For example, full end-to-end encryption. Many answers here talk about metadata. There are answers talking about links to external identifiers, pseudonymous IDs. I would say that all of these answers are demonstrating some technical knowledge. But we did this study with average users that we recruited via the Prolific platform. So I would like to invite you to keep these answers in mind for comparing it with the results that we actually got. Now, there is a second scenario. There are two suspected criminals who claim that they don't know each other and have never been in touch, but the police suspect that they communicated electronically to organize the crime. The forensic team is trying to find communication records between them, and they think they communicated via the app Chatty, which is popular for its privacy and security features. Yes, Texty and Chatty are my Alice and Bob. So the question now is, what security and privacy features do you think would obstruct the police from proving that the criminals communicated with each other using Chatty? Your turn. The ones from the previous question. Lack of metadata. Same as for Alice and Bob, yeah. Ephemeral message, metadata encryption, text encryption, not using Chatty. Chatty deleting metadata from their servers. Same as before. Let me remove the QR. Destroyable cell phone, nice, new one. Great. I think, zero logs on server. Yes, disappearing messages on client side. App Store removes app download records. Self-destructing phones. VPNs? Burner phones. Cool. I find it a little bit interesting that now we are talking about criminals, so burner phones appear into the picture. So we can also start seeing some patterns in these answers, and it makes a lot of sense to think that the same technologies that would help Alice and Bob would also obstruct the police work. So in the survey, what we wanted to know was not just what kind of features would people think as useful tools for these scenarios. We also wanted them to reflect about the trade-offs between these technologies, because the same technologies that can be used for good can also be used for bad when they respond to these scenarios. So thank you so much for your brilliant participation. As I was just saying, these were not the only questions that we asked to participants. We also included other questions to help them reflect about these trade-offs. One of those questions, for example, was, in your opinion, should all messaging apps have the security and privacy features you suggested for Texty? Explain why or why not. And after the second scenario, we asked, in your opinion, should the security and privacy features you mentioned be banned from all messaging apps? Explain why not. So we were trying to extract, like, what are their feelings about this idea of preventing third parties from knowing who communicates with whom. So the results that I'm going to show correspond to answers from 189 participants recruited via Prolific. It's a recruitment platform for research studies from the UK. So most participants came from the UK, but other participants also came from Spain, Germany, the United States, France, and Ireland. And the requirement for participation was just that they used any messaging app. So what do we mean by untraceability? Going back to the title of this talk. So in the context of messaging platforms, we defined untraceability as the conceptual goal of preventing third parties from knowing who communicates with whom. This goes beyond protecting the contents of the communication. And we are trying to place emphasis in keeping the fact that two people communicated with each other stays confidential. So to better understand this, we can also talk about what's the difference with end-to-end encryption. So end-to-end encryption is a specific cryptographic approach to protecting the contents of communication from attackers that could intercept a message. For example, an attacker could be the company behind the platform or network observers. And untraceability is something that we're thinking as a broader concept that is also concerned with metadata, as many of you pointed out in the answers. What metadata? Well, any metadata that could allow attackers from knowing that two people communicated with each other. For example, could be the metadata that travels with a message, stating what's the sender and the receiver of the message, which a company could keep logs of, including the timestamp of those messages. Or it could also be logs generated by network observers doing traffic analysis, not necessarily the company providing the service. So with this in mind, I would like to show you the results. So I thought that I was going to have less time for this talk, and I'm allowing myself to relax a little bit and maybe say a bit more than what I had planned. This is a screenshot from the paper where you can see all the different classes of features that participants perceived as useful for untraceability, given just their understanding of the scenarios as you yourselves read. So we can see, for example, that a little bit over half of the participants suggested something related to data encryption, but there were many other categories that we're going to discuss some. And to show you this, I also want to show you examples of how people expressed their answers. And I think this is probably a little bit of the other side of the coin to Andy's talk from yesterday about the two passwords and how hard it is to come up with vocabulary that users understand. I think it's pretty insightful to see how these participants expressed the features that they wanted for Chatty and Texty. One participant said, a good feature that Texty might have would be to be able to encrypt the content of the documents before sending them so that, if intercepted by a third party, they wouldn't be able to read or understand it. Once received by Bob, they could be unencrypted so he can read them. Mwah. When I analyze this data, I'm seeing a participant trying to explain in simple, colloquial terms that Texty should have end-to-end encryption. And the fact that this participant is thinking of end-to-end encryption tells me that they are considering perhaps Texty, the company Texty, as a potential attacker. They might also be thinking of network observers. But there's quite a lot of emphasis, there's explicit emphasis in the content of the documents. I think this participant is really thinking of the content of the messages and not, there are no references to metadata that are also very important. I mean, if they are key to achieving this broader goal of untraceability. But overall, this is a pretty clear description of the feature that this participant wanted. Sometimes the answers weren't as clear. So, if, for example, some participants were very straightforward and say end-to-end encryption. Like, messages should be end-to-end encrypted. Other participants said Texty should be end-to-end encrypted. I'm not entirely sure what that means, that Texty should be end-to-end encrypted. And this one is my very favorite. I want a t-shirt with this on it. I can't remember the correct term, but if someone who isn't a user were to look at it, it would be all symbols, illegible letters, etc. I think that this person is talking about some form of encryption. I can't tell if they're thinking about end-to-end encryption, like less alone. I can't really even imagine what kind of protocol they might be thinking. One that turns messages into symbols and illegible letters. But perhaps they are. When we think about attackers, then we have to guess a little bit because we don't know if this is end-to-end encryption or maybe something more like TLS, on the side of TLS. But there's still some emphasis on encrypting the content of the data. I think this person might be mostly thinking in terms of the content of the data. Now, let's move on to a pretty... So you also answered features related to deletion, and we found this pretty interesting because we came to this study with our own biases. The backstage story of this paper is that some of my collaborators were working on their own protocol for untraceable messaging. It's called Denim. You can... like as in deniable I am, but Denim sounds pretty cute. So you can look it up, or I can point to you towards it later. And they were designing this protocol to protect users against traffic analysis. So for my collaborators, when they were talking about untraceability, they were talking about metadata coming from the traffic of messages, metadata that someone observes, like following HTTP messages going back and forth, and very sophisticated analysis to find patterns in who communicates with whom. When I heard the word metadata for the first time, I immediately thought of the server of the company logging the sender, receiver, and timestamp. But we were both thinking of attackers as potential attackers of network observers or the company itself. And when you think about message deletion, then perhaps a new attacker could be someone that gets access to a user's chat history. And this could be like an attacker that gets access to their account or their physical phone. Or it could be the receiver themselves that give their phone to someone else or forward a message. We found it very interesting that people were proposing self-destructing messages, a way of clearing the history of messages sent between people. And even within all these proposals of message deletion, there were differences in how people expressed this. Some people talked about self-destructing messages also in terms of auto-destruction chats, temporal messages. The word traces also came up a lot, although we are not entirely sure if those traces include metadata or they are just referring to the contents of the message. And what I find the most insightful is a class of features that talk about hiding, identifying attributes from the communication partners themselves. So some examples of this question, of these answers, where communication should be completely anonymous, so no names are attached to the chat messages. No real names used, not even pseudonymized, but really anonymous. A feature where you can change your username to remain anonymous. And so we see this concept of anonymity coming up a lot. I am not sure if what they mean by anonymous is the same as what some of you meant by anonymous when you were, or pseudonymous when you were posting it on Mentimeter. Here again, we could think that they are assuming that the attacker is someone that gets access to a user's chat history, so they don't want them to see personal information about the sender. But we could also detect that there is a bit of a rationale that says that if the intended receiver of the message cannot see who sent the message, neither can the company, or neither can network observers. So it feels a little bit like they're thinking of how to hide, how to be anonymous to the receiver of the message, not how to be anonymous in a traffic analysis context, or how to be anonymous to the company providing the service. So for me, the word anonymous here is a pretty big red flag. And this was 38 of participants suggesting some form of anonymity in the first scenario and 20% in the second one. It's a pretty big number. So I was going to skip it, but I think it's interesting to point of other features that people came up with. For example, disabling screenshots. I think disabling screenshots is also thinking of the receiver as a potential attacker. And it's also worrying about what the user interface is showing. And it's not talking about the messages in transit. Definitely not talking about metadata. They're thinking in terms of what I can see. Minimizing data in servers, I think it makes a lot of sense. It also talks about the service provider as a potential attacker. And very few, but not too few, about 13% and 9% in each vignette, talked about untraceable IPs, for example, using VPNs or IP obfuscations. These were the most maybe like tech savvy answers, let's say. So this is to give you an overview of how we could infer what kinds of attackers people were considering for the scenarios that we presented. But overall, we don't see that metadata is really at the top of their heads. They also suggested using Messenger with fake profiles. So regardless of how participants think that they can achieve untraceability, as I said before, we were also wondering about is this something they think it should be available in all apps or should it be banned? How do they feel about untraceability overall? So we conducted a reflexive thematic analysis that is a pretty thorough technique to analyze qualitative data on open-ended answers. And we focused on trying to understand patterns in their opinions about untraceability. And we identified three trends. The first trend corresponds to a narrative relying on privacy as a human right. Excuse me if I assume who my audience is here, but I think maybe I don't need to explain this narrative in much detail. So, for example, some answers that were telling us that these people were thinking in terms of privacy as a human right was that they were saying, we all deserve privacy, or I should be able to send sensitive information without third parties finding out. People are entitled to privacy. And something characteristic of this perspective is that privacy is something that should stay a right to everybody, even if it is misused. So there were some comments like this one that said, the features I suggested for untraceability should not be banned at all, even in democratic countries, they might want to apply high levels of surveillance to their citizens, and this is not okay. We should have the right to privacy, and the fact that the apps can also be used in a criminal way does not take away from our right to privacy. So there were many answers in line with this one, where privacy, even when it was misused as a technology, was unnegotiable. On the other hand, there was another narrative that was screaming, safety comes first. And this is what we call the safety fundamentalists. Some opinions or things that people said aligning with this narrative were that yes, there are risks to the features that they proposed, like bullying, blackmail, sharing of confidential images, affairs. Yes, I think that the features I suggested should be banned. So much bad stuff is going on using these apps, child pornography, people trafficking, drug trafficking, and more. And unlike the privacy fundamentalists, these people were placing the blame on these problems on the technology. And we could read this in the way that they phrased opinions like this one. I think it leads to freedom to cyberbully. Or these features create environments where people can feel indestructible in regards to talking about illegal and harmful things. We also noticed a big, like, nothing to hide attitude. Like, there were many, many answers stating that they had nothing to hide, and if you really needed privacy, it was because you were doing something wrong. For example, I always think it's a bit suspicious, Dixit, when someone is too worried about their online life. I think that when you don't have anything to hide, you don't need to be scared or worry about it. This privacy thing, in the end, only helps the so-called bad guys. And something else that I would like to highlight about the worries of the safety fundamentalists relates to what I was talking about before about anonymity. Imagine that people did think that anonymous messages, in terms of, like, I'm even anonymous to the receiver of the message, those were the features that they were judging. So of course they came up with these worries. I think being able to send fully anonymous messages is quite scary, because I assume they also cannot be blocked. It would be very scary for victims of stalking, etc., to receive these messages. I agree, if that's what you understand by anonymity. Someone could be talking to someone they think they know, but in reality they are someone completely different. This could result in many crimes, such as pedophilia or fraud. So I bring these examples up because I think it's so interesting to see how the same words can mean something so different depending on what are the lenses that you have on. So these people are really concerned with online safety. They see the word anonymous, and from their best of their understanding, these are the concerns that come up. But someone like that falls more in the privacy fundamentalist category, perhaps is someone that is also a bit more tech savvy, then is more used to hearing about anonymity in terms of, I want to be anonymous for traffic analysis attackers, or I want to be anonymous to companies, not from the people that I'm talking to. And this is something that I added 2 seconds before starting the presentation. There is a third category that is people that perhaps are trying their best to have the best of both worlds. There's this narrative that we're calling, I'm also all for privacy, but, and we call these users the optimists. These are users that, in general, align with privacy fundamentalists, but they also care about accountability. Then they propose, for example, that privacy technologies should have exceptions. The privacy should be penetrable by law enforcement, but not to the everyday user. They are thinking of privacy in terms of, they're putting conditions on when privacy should be like sacred and when it shouldn't. The thing is that, at least technologically, we haven't found a way of making these kind of exceptions. I don't think all messaging apps should have high security measures, as not everything in them is always highly confidential, like the original case mentioned here. Yeah, but I don't go around thinking, oh, in 20 years from now, I'm gonna care about what I'm texting today. And perhaps I only realized that something was confidential later on. And perhaps I don't even know who is getting access to this information when I share this data. So maybe you will find this that it resonates with recent debates in Europe. Someone feeling unsure about whether these features should be banned or available everywhere. Possibly, I think the features for communicating anonymously should not be allowed, as most people do not need those levels of security and privacy features. I think that sophisticated encryption should be banned for all standard communication apps, as it would help the police in solving and preventing crimes. However, there does not need to be a service where official agencies, etc., can communicate freely without that information getting into the criminal domain. I think what they're thinking about is, so if you're an official agency, if you're the police, you're allowed to use these apps. Other people can't. Yeah, it sounds a little bit naive. This is why we are calling them the optimists. So these narratives, however, aren't talking about features for untraceability at all. Nobody is really talking about, they're not explicitly talking about keeping the fact that a communication happened confidential. They're not even talking about the word traces anymore. They're not, of course, not talking about metadata anymore. I think they are talking about their underlying values about privacy or about accountability. From the moment that we asked them about their opinions on the features they suggested themselves, it's like they turned their feature logic off and started talking about their general opinions on privacy and online safety. So going back to the talk title, how do users feel about untraceability? Well, perhaps the same way that they may feel about privacy in general. And I think this is a pretty important takeaway for when someone is designing a new type of privacy-enhancing technology. If you're thinking about how your users are going to adopt it or how they're going to welcome it, perhaps it's not too much about that new feature. Perhaps it's very much about their underlying values about privacy versus online safety. So, how is this useful for designers of messaging apps? I think we can we should explore this in much more detail with concrete design guidelines, for example, and maybe more specific studies. But here are some intuitions for now. So. When describing privacy and safety features, I think it's very important to know your audience so that your message resonates with the values that they care about. So if you talk about protecting against mass surveillance, privacy fundamentalists will love it, but safety fundamentalists may understand surveillance as a way of detecting bad guys, so they feel safer when they are surveilled. And I think this was a very eye-opening thing for me with this study, that some people actually want a form of surveillance. If you talk about anonymous communication, privacy fundamentalists might appreciate the extra level of privacy, but many others might misinterpret it, and safety fundamentalists will worry about bullying and harassment and having zero accountability for bad behavior online. And if you want to target both, this is like a new idea that we are discussing. Maybe instead of selling privacy as a personal benefit, maybe we can frame privacy as an altruistic act. The more people that use our privacy-enhancing technology, the harder it will be to detect whistleblowers and other vulnerable people that actually need this extra level of privacy. And I think maybe thinking in terms of this altruistic privacy perspective could be a way of catering to both privacy fundamentalists, safety fundamentalists, and everybody in between. So this is it. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to hear your thoughts and questions. And thank you so much for participating.
Carla, thank you so much for that. That was really fascinating. I'm sure lots of other people found it interesting too. We've got a couple of questions in the chat we can start with, if you like.
Yeah, sure.
So Sky's asked, what is your guess on how many people would be willing to accept inconvenience in order to have more privacy? It feels like many people would intentionally instantly agree that they need all the privacy and protection possible, but when they see how much work it is to be actually untraceable, they would quickly get exhausted. I'm unsure if it would be really possible to have both.
How many? I think these things change over time. For this study, we did not run numbers, for example, because the data is very qualitative, and I think we need specific studies about for quantifying how many people would feel in one way or the other. But there were previous studies that, for example, also identify privacy fundamentalists as the people that might prioritize privacy over convenience. And I think one of the first studies, I might be wrong, but I remember something around 30% of like the pool of participants that they studied. But the big majority was perhaps what would be the equivalent of the optimists here that are called privacy pragmatists. And I think, if I remember correctly, this was at the very least half of the people. And these are people that, on a case-by-case basis, they decide, is it worth it to sacrifice privacy for this very convenient feature that I have? On a case-by-case basis, they might say, yes, it's worth it to go for convenience over privacy. I hope this answers the question. I think my intuition would be that today privacy and convenience are still very coupled with each other, and people will keep prioritizing convenience.
Cool, thank you. Any questions from the room? Ruben.
Thanks. I enjoyed the talk. As a former academic, I appreciate the studies. Can you talk a little bit about, or do you know, the demographics of the survey participants? Are they, you know, you alluded to them being regular users, but there were some fairly, I think, advanced concepts mentioned in the responses, so I was just curious.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we didn't ask, for example, any questions that could actually let us assess how tech-savvy they were. The survey was pretty long. We mostly relied on the demographics that we got from Prolific instead of asking extra questions. So we know a little bit about, for example, whether they were unemployed or full-time employed, things like that. I don't remember exactly the numbers, but they are on the paper. But specifically about how much knowledge they have about technical aspects of privacy, we didn't ask directly. We are maybe seeing traces of that in the answers themselves.
Okay, thank you.
Cool. I'll take another question from the chat. BGT asks, how much do you think zero-knowledge-based cryptography influences privacy? Is it worth implementing considering more user inconvenience?
I think I should know a little bit more about zero knowledge cryptography to really answer this.
I guess it speaks to...
What do you think?
I don't know, but maybe you can ask a broader question of do you think there is a path towards reducing the friction for privacy features to make it easier for everyone to use?
I hope I don't disappoint the person asking this question, but I think the main point that I'm trying to make is that it's not always about making it easier to understand. Even if it was the easiest to understand, people might care about something else. And we were seeing like a pretty big proportion, I don't know the number, but it was a pretty big proportion of answers that would correspond to the safety fundamentalist narrative. I don't think that these people would not choose strong privacy guarantees because of convenience. I think these people, they care a lot, but they care a lot about being safe from other malicious users, and then you could think of that as a convenience. That's what they're trading individual privacy for. So yeah, I think my complex answer is I think it's not about making it easier to understand. It's about something else.
Yeah, so the answer to the question might be, even if your new encryption standards introduce more friction, then people might... That's not the thing that's going to stop people adopting it.
Yeah, there are other types of frictions.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Andy's got a question.
Hey, did you ask any questions in the context of medical applications? Because, like, being untraceable if you're contacting a clinic about a particular type of illness might be a very relatable desire for privacy.
No, when we were brainstorming about the scenarios, we didn't go for a medical context, but I think it's a good one. And again, to keep it more or less doable under 30 minutes, which was already a pretty long time for an online survey, we just went for two scenarios. But exploring other scenarios that might resonate maybe more directly with people on a personal basis would definitely be interesting and I think could influence the answers.
Thank you, Carla, for yet another fantastic talk. Comment really more than a question. I would like to raise awareness of context and bubble, because you are, you know, you're kind of identified in inverted commas the more tech savvy and the normal user, and I think it's also a question of what people experience, like whether they experience cyberbullying of their kids in school. And I think that there is a key to open information and sharing knowledge. And I think that the dangers of misuse of information in... I mean, what does it mean to have metadata? And, you know, what can really... It's this issue of, like, oh, if you've got nothing to hide, but what can really... You know, the idea of, like, you're not getting any credit from a bank because you happen to live in an area where a lot of people are unemployed or something. I think that the normal people might not have an awareness of what you can do, what are the effects of collecting metadata and big data. And for me, a big opportunity is in... knowledge transfer because at the end of the day, I find that there's the large scale of people who have more their focus on, as you said, like safety, and people have more like on freedom, and there are those both aspects. And if you have not experienced the other side or have a knowledge of the other side, then you will not come together in a compromise.
I think it's a it's a very good point, and it reminds me a little bit of this new concept that we're playing with that we call altruistic privacy, because that would imply a lot of like education and or what you're calling knowledge transfer in perhaps, for example, letting people know about how. Health insurance companies could learn about how often do you talk with your doctor if they had access to metadata, and perhaps you are not in a vulnerable position to care about it, but it's a big deal for other people. So if we are going to care about the safety of others, well, privacy is also an aspect of safety, but there needs to be a lot more education about this. Yeah.
Another question. All right. With me.
Hi again. Thanks for the second great talk. I was just wondering, in a magical world where encryption and privacy is the default, do you think that the safety group would still will to give up this or not?
Give me a second. You're making me think of the recent debates around child control. Are we all more or less on the aware of? Yeah. I don't know. It made me think that it's very tricky because while we were working on this study, perhaps like from our own perspective, we were all for like, yeah, we need untraceability and on the other hand, you see how many countries in the EU are pushing for this idea of having client-side scanning, which they claim doesn't break end-to-end encryption, but come on. And what they are seeking are ways to detect child abuse behavior, for example, and in the future it could be for other types of threats or dangers related to defense. And in that context, it's like you see people that are really caring. There's a very strong safety fundamentalist narrative in that, falling into optimistic solutions. And I would have to say that if I have to choose between preserving only end-to-end encryption and forgetting about untraceable metadata versus child control, it's like, yeah, well, let's keep end-to-end encryption, protecting just the contents and the metadata battle is a future challenge. I don't know if this maybe somehow answers your question. Yeah.
Okay, we'll take one more question from the chat and then I think we'll wrap up. Another question from BGT. We're talking about privacy versus safety, but what about privacy versus security? After all, the more security is required, the more we need centralized choke points. For example, if you want security for malware, you need to pass your files through an antivirus, which may collect your data for other means than just scanning your file. How should that be balanced? We'd like to challenge you.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it also makes me think that. So I don't know if you noticed in the questions that you had to answer, there was a bit of an umbrella talking about privacy and security features, because I don't think that the distinction is always very clear, and I think questions like these are quite exceptional, where someone contrasts privacy and security instead of privacy and safety. I don't know. I think generally I would also think of in what ways security is a means, how are technologies coupling those two concepts together, and perhaps sometimes very often confusing privacy for security instead of thinking of privacy as something a bit more contextual or personal. Yeah, but I'm not sure. I don't have a direct answer. Yeah, thank you.
Fair enough. Thank you very much. Okay, Carla's been very generous with her time. She was only meant to talk for 25 minutes to start with. So thank you so much. Everyone, give it up again for Carla.
Thank you. Thank you for participating.